Hello. Hello.
I'm Kendra.
And I'm August.
And you're listening to Book Dumb, the bookcast brought to you by a couple of dummies.
This week, we are sharing some of our favorite, or our versions of vacation reads, I guess. Might not be like a lot of other people's vacation reads, because...
Yes.
To quote Leonard Cohen, we want it darker. We have some of our favorite vacation reads that we're going to share, as well as some honorable mentions, as always. And then also some books that we really want to read on this summer, whether we're on vacation or not.
Yeah, I hope to be on vacation, but probably not.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed that we get to go somewhere nice.
Oh, God, I love that.
I just want to go to a river. Take me to the river.
I was thinking that, too, the fish in the bars. Have you seen that?
No.
The mechanical fish that's on, like, a wooden plaque. And it's like, take me to the river.
Billy Bass?
Yeah.
Mine is the don't worry.
Yes.
Be happy. I was thinking of David Byrne.
Okay.
Which is more appropriate for our Macbeth episode because I just think of, take a look at these hands, but whatever.
Take a look at these hands.
Okay, but before we jump into our favorite vacation reads, you gotta tell me, what are you reading right now?
I am reading Trick Mirror by Gia Tolentino.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, what is it about? Good question. I'm only a little bit into it.
Okay.
But I think it's like a meditation on the effects, the psychological effects of social media.
Okay.
Slash memoir.
Is that one with the beautiful cover where it's like purple and orange and white? Or am I thinking of a different book?
It's like the one I have. I mean, maybe
that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's like yellow and purple. And I'm still very, very early into it, only a couple chapters, but I didn't realize she was on a reality show when she was in high school.
So
that's like an interesting. Like, no, social media and reality shows are very different, but I think have similar effects on both audiences and people who are a part of it.
Well, you know what I have to ask? What reality show was she on? Do we know?
Boys versus Girls? It was, like, in the 90s.
I don't like the sound of that.
It was, like, basically, like, a real, like, Road Rules-esque. It was on that network, The End, that also had a bunch of, like, other teenage reality shows.
Okay.
It was post-Real World, but I think pre-Road Rules.
Okay.
So it was, like, early in that, and it sounds exactly what it is. It's, like, Battle of the Sexes competitions and drama and stuff.
Interesting. So probably during the time when that was out, I was busy watching Tila Tequila Find Love. So
I was going to be like, we were watching Barney or something.
You weren't watching Tila Tequila?
Well, I mean, I was at one
That point. Was, like, late 90s or early 2000s, wasn't it? Or was that more mid-2000s?
I feel like it was mid-2000s. I feel like it was 2006, 2008, right? 2009?
I have no idea.
I'm not gonna
If it was the late 90s, maybe I was actually just watching Wishbone.
Anyway, I got sidetracked. What are you reading right now?
I'm reading my second Toni Morrison book ever.
Wow.
I know. Big shock. Not really a big shock. I need to read more Toni Morrison. Set out with the goal this year of reading a number of her books. This is the first one I've read this year, so I'm failing. But that's okay. I'm failing at everything. And it was Home by Toni Morrison. This was really interesting. Really liking it so far. It's a pretty short one. The audiobook that I'm listening to is under 5 hours. And when I was talking to some friends about Tomo, they said, if you're ever going to listen to one of her books without having read it before, this is the one, because it is a little bit more simple. Not to say that it's not intense. It is Tomo, so it is sad.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really liking it so far.
Does she also narrate this one?
Yes, she does.
Thank God.
That beautiful voice, yeah. I'm listening to it still, though, at 1.3 the speed, because it's just a little too slow for my tastes or preference.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
Yeah, but I'm really liking it. So Home by Toni Morrison.
Yeah, and we have a special guest here with us today.
Oh, she is sleepy. You might hear some just random huffs and puffs. It's Penny, a total baby. She's a very sweet girl, and we love her. She's a very cute dog.
I was going to say, she's also a dog.
Yes, but she's asleep right now, so
yeah.
Hopefully it's all good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What if you could, the mics just pick up a little puppy snore?
Yeah, that's what's happening. I mean, that would be nice. I would want that out of a podcast, so I hope you all enjoy that, too.
Yeah. She's out, though. Who knows what she'll be doing in 5 minutes, though, because she's crazy. Okay.
So before we get into it, should we define, like, what vacation reads mean to us individually? Because you kind of preface that with being like, this might not be everyone's vacation read list.
Yeah. So should we define what, like, a typical vacation read is, or should we just say how we interpret it?
Let's do both. Why not?
Okay. So what's a typical vacation read, Kendra?
When I think of a vacation read, I think, is something you pick up at the airport. Mm. That's something that's popular.
Okay.
Something that's maybe leaning more towards romance or thriller. Okay. Like, I think of Beach Read, the actual book Beach Read. Mm. I think of The Wife Between Us, which those are fine books. Like, those are great books. Mm-hmm. But they're not books I associate a lot of, like, deep thinking with.
Okay.
I think I like reading those kind of books because on a vacation, you kind of want to be, I mean, you're vacationing. You don't want to be stressed out. You don't want to be overthinking. You don't want to be doing any work, right? Mm-hmm. So I think of books that are light, that are maybe a little sexy, sultry, that the general public enjoys reading because you have unlimited time and you don't want to be doing anything difficult.
Okay.
What about you?
I think that's a pretty true definition of what most people think vacation reads are, which is not what I think vacation reads are. Should we go into what we think they are? Okay. My main requirements for a vacation read, sad and short. Most important thing, I'm sure we have all been the person who gets on the plane or like is going somewhere and you have multiple books with you. You're not going to be carrying a massive fucking book with you. You're not going to maybe you're bringing all the Girl with the Dragon Tattoos books. Those I would consider great vacation reads, but I don't want to lug all those around. So it needs to be a petite pocket book or something smaller. And also I like to be sad. If it's like hot and steamy in any way, cool. But I need to be bummed out, even if it's a vacation. Depressing books are my comfort zone. They make me feel nice and chill. Nothing can relax me more than being depressed. So yeah, that's my idea of a vacation read. What's your idea of a vacation read?
So you'll see by my list, my idea of it is all over the fucking place. Mm-hmm. Like, typically, I agree, something short, I would like to pack at least, like, if it's a two-week vacation, I'm going to pack at least 12 books.
Oh, wow.
Like,
see, I was just on vacation visiting my family, and I was there for 4 or 5 days, and I brought 3 books. But I also bought 3 books when I was there.
Yeah. If I don't overpack the books, then I'm buying books at the airport, or I'm buying books while we're on the trip, because I've said this to you. I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but I'm such a mood reader where I don't know. I was like, what if I wake up and I'm in a, like, I want true crime. Or if I wake up and I do want fantasy, or I want a detective fiction or something like that. And so I overpack with books. And so they all need to be under 300 pages, ideally around 200.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like, my instinct is for thrillers, especially like Gone Girl-esque thrillers.
The best.
Yeah.
Like, I did not put Gone Girl on my list, but it could have been.
I intentionally left it off too, because I was like, they get it.
We love Gillian.
Yeah. But also, I do love short story collections and poetry collections. Poetry is usually my go-to to take on vacations, because, I don't know, it just feels really nice to read it on a beach.
Interesting. Okay. I would never bring poetry anywhere with me, but I also just don't really read any poetry. I feel like I probably feel the same way, more so with, like, plays and bringing plays on trips. Because there's, like, that nice theatrical drama element, which you need a little bit of drama on a vacation if it's not coming from those that you're with.
Yeah. Well said.
Okay. So we each have 3 honorable mentions. Should we just get those honorable mentions out of the way right now?
Let's do it. You want to get us kicked off?
Sure. Should I just list all 3 or should we alternate?
Let's alternate.
Okay. So my first one is a book that I just finished reading and it was so entertaining. I listened to the audiobook. Would recommend the audiobook. It's called Interior Chinatown. It came out in 2020 and it's by Charles Yu. Great. Just great.
Yeah.
I would say go into this not knowing anything, because when I started listening to this book, I was hella confused and it made it even more fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just evaluating a particular family living in a Chinatown in the United States. I don't think they ever make it clear what Chinatown it is. Talking about like the position of Chinatown within culture, specifically for Chinese Americans and Chinese immigrants to the United States. It was just very, very entertaining. And I think Charles Yu is from San Francisco.
Wow, that's really cool.
I'm not entirely sure about that, so don't quote me on it. I just know Green Apple has been hyping him up a lot, and after reading this, I can understand why.
I've seen that book everywhere, and it's been on my TBR, so maybe that I might have to add that to my summer TBR.
Yeah, it's also a really short audiobook. It was under 5 hours, so perfect for a flight, perfect for a road trip.
Can I just say, before we move into honorable mentions, audiobooks are clutch for vacation reads, because sometimes you just want to be drinking by a pool, closing your eyes. So if you're not into audiobooks, maybe the next time you go on your vacation, try one out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So maybe we'll have to each pick an audiobook specifically.
Ooh,
I did not plan with that.
We could, yeah, let's throw a wrench in there and try to come up with one mid-episode.
Ooh, okay. Well, what's your first honorable mention?
It's The Fever by Megan Abbott. This is a young adult thriller.
Is this the one about the yellow fever?
No.
I'm thinking of a different book.
But I did read one of those in elementary school.
That's I read one of those in elementary school. We read the same book.
It was called, like, 1642 or something.
We read the same book. I did a report on it.
It was so good. I loved it.
We love Plague.
We do. And also, I think it started the historical fiction obsession for me. Because I was like...
It all makes sense.
Oh my God. No, this is a different one. So this one is by the same author who I mentioned recently in an episode. She wrote Dare Me. That's her biggest book. It's also a TV series now. I like her writing. It focuses on teenage girls specifically and, like, dysfunctional relationships between teenage girls, which I think is fascinating personally. And I just got a big sigh from Penny. She doesn't agree.
Yeah.
And so in The Fever, it's just, like, about a high school that all of a sudden all the girls, like, obviously teenage girls. I almost called them women because I hate when people call women girls, but these are actually children. So that's fine. Anyway, Kendra, get your head on straight. They start, like, having seizures and get this fever, but there's no physical ailment, and they think it's a psychological thing that girls are experiencing. And it's, like, this whole metaphor for female hysteria, and it's really interesting. It is a little, like, campy at times because...
Is it, like, a good camp? Or
I personally think so. I like it a lot. Mm. It has been a few years since I read it, but I read it during the summer once when I was visiting home in Southern California, and I literally read it by the pool, and so I always associate it with, like, summer reads. And also it has this, like, this lake element and the small town element, and it doesn't really happen during summer, but it just feels very, like, it just feels very summery to me.
Okay, nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Adding it to the TBR. Wow. Okay. My next honorable mention is a book that I think I've talked about before on here. I'm not entirely sure. And that's Laura by Vera Caspare. This is a pulp novel that came out in 1943, so a little bit older, but still a fun one. This is detective fiction. It's interesting as it is detective fiction written by one of the few notable detective fiction authors of this time that was a woman, Vera Caspare. I really enjoyed it. I love the film adaptation of this book, and I actually had seen the film adaptation before reading it or before even knowing that it was a book, which probably says something about the sexism in our culture when evaluating film noir, because we all know who Raymond Chandler is, but who knows who Vera Caspare is?
Yeah.
I didn't, but it's really cool. The film adaptation is where there's this, like, whole acknowledgement within cinema where often villains are queer-coded in certain ways, particularly vocally. Mm-hmm. So, like, a lot of villains, even in, like, Disney films and other films, have often what is described as, like, the stereotypical gay male voice, and this really kicked that off. Okay. So that's the villain in it, Waldo Leidecker. Amazing name. Absolutely love it. Super, super fun read. Very, very engaging. If you hadn't seen the movie before and read it, I'm sure it would be, just, like, even more engaging because I had an idea of what was coming. But wow, still great.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
This is going to be a surprise to many, I think, especially August. But I do think this is a vacation read for the general public.
Okay.
And that is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Wow.
Which, as some of you might know, was one of my most disappointing books of 2020. Not because it was a bad book, but because it was just so hyped up. And I was like, I don't get it. It's still a great book. I think a lot of people would really like it. And this, to me, is peak vacation because it's so short. Like, I finished it in one day.
Mm.
It's fun. There's romance. But it does deal with, like, important topics like sexism, exploitation of women in Hollywood, xenophobia, racism. Like, things that are always important to read and explore through literature, but in a very, like, I would say low stakes, emotionally level.
Okay.
Although, saying that, I know a lot of people were devastated by this book. So, I don't want to go in and be like, it's all happy-go-lucky. You're going to get your heart broken. But I know, I think that's always fun.
I agree with that. Yeah. I still need to, I'm probably going to listen to that one if I ever actually get to it, because I know you were disappointed with having the physical copy of it. So, it's like kind of on my TBR, but not really.
Yeah. I honestly think you would enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to change your life. You're not going to reread it ever.
It'll just be one of those audiobooks that kind of have on in the background. Who knows? Maybe I'll end up loving it. We never know.
That's true. Look at Addie.
Yeah. Addie LaRue. Can never forget about her, can we? Oh. Okay, and so my final honorable mention is a book that I really, really love, and it was hard not to list multiple books by this author. I'm actually just about to start another one of her books now, mm-hmm. and that's Slouching Towards Bethlehem by Joan Didion, because who says summer like Joan Didion? Slouching Towards Bethlehem is amazing. It's a collection of essays that she wrote throughout the 1960s and I believe the early 1970s as well about California culture. There are some great sections on Los Angeles, but also San Francisco. The San Francisco essays are the ones that I find most interesting. If you've already read Slouching Towards Bethlehem and you haven't read anything else by Joan Didion, The White Album is also a fantastic collection of essays. I think that was the first book that I read this year, maybe the second. And I was just blown away. It was one that I had been wanting to read for the longest time, and I finally got a copy. And, you know, I hate it when the Reagans are mentioned. That could have ruined the book for me because Nancy Reagan is there, and honestly, fuck them both so much. Yeah. I hate them so much, but it didn't ruin the book, and it was spectacular. I think she's just a phenomenal journalist, and her work has held up over time, and I just really, really love her.
Yeah, that's gotta be a powerful book to... not have the Reagan.
It's okay. At least it was only one essay in it, and okay. It was a shorter one. But then she just like went on and like wrote a bunch of essays about like water treatment plants and the highway system, and oh. I was like, this isn't going to be interesting, and then I was obsessed with it. So
that's a sign of a good writer.
She's very talented.
And then my last one is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, which I read last year. It's mm-hmm. probably like my favorite science fiction I've ever read. I think it's really great. And the reason I chose it as an honorable mention for a vacation read is because it's just so fun, mm-hmm. genuinely fun. And when I think of vacation reads, obviously fun means different things in different moods. But mm-hmm. I think the general public, the people out there, would really enjoy this. It's super easy to read. Mm-hmm. It's also one of those books I feel like you can put down, and maybe if you don't pick it up for 2 days, you're not going to be like, okay, where did I, like, what was happening?
Yeah.
Which I think is really essential for a vacation read.
Nice. Okay, that's one that's, like, actively on my TBR. I want to, it's not on my list for this episode, but it very well could have been for my TBR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, then, do you want to get started with your top five?
Sure. So, my fifth pick, this is one that I debated and, like, actually put the most thought into on if I should include it or not, because it's not necessarily an easy read. Mm-hmm. It is a play. It is relatively quick. I picked it because it's filled with queer drama, and what's better? And that's A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams, which who the fuck thinks this is a vacation read? I'm like thinking about it now and I'm like, August, you big dummy. Like that is not, like nobody wants to read about Blanche and Stanley, shithead Stanley on vacation.
But you do.
I do because I want to think about Marlon Brando with his shirt off. Yes, was he terrible? Yes, we all know that. But I can still admire a man's chest. And yeah. Whose chest would I rather admire than Marlon Brando's? He's dead. Fuck him. But so A Streetcar Named Desire is a phenomenal play by Tennessee Williams. It came out in 1947. Tennessee Williams is probably one of the most famous American playwrights and famous queer playwrights just out there in the world. He also wrote Cat on the Hot Tin Roof, which is phenomenal. I've only seen the movie of it, but he walked out of the movie because it wasn't queer enough for him. And that movie is hella gay for the time period that it came out. So I'm like, Tennessee, you're a champ. Love it. So A Streetcar Named Desire is a very interesting play that deals with perception and also depictions of insanity for a time period. So it follows the primary character Blanche DuBois visit her sister Stella and her new husband Stanley, who live in New Orleans. So they live in New Orleans in the French Quarter, and the reason why it's called A Streetcar Named Desire is because a streetcar named Desire brings Blanche to the French Quarter. So wow. But you know, there's deeper meaning, you know, talking about desire in this context, what desire means. My summary for this literally just says Blanche DuBois, after going through some shit, goes to stay in New Orleans with her sister Stella and husband Stanley Kowalski. He is Polish, so we're a big fan of that. Good Polish representation, maybe not so much. He falls into a lot of Polish stereotypes, but those stereotypes are addressed. Mm. This is a really, really fun one. I read this for the first time in a literature and psychology class that I had, so we were reading it through the lens of psychoanalysis, which was very, very fun. Blanche is not a reliable narrator at all. She could very easily be included in our unreliable narrators episode, and I'm just going to check and see if she was, because that would not surprise me. Where are my notes? It's not. So, but yeah, I just think this is a really, really interesting play. I love plays from America at this time period. So this is a comfort read for me. I also just, you know, queer literature of the past. I'm a big fan of seeing it. I'm so happy that it exists. And I think Tennessee Williams is just a phenomenal writer. If you don't like sad American plays, though,
maybe not.
Stay away, maybe. Stay away. But yeah, I'm a big fan of this one.
That's great. If you all could see the way August's eyes are lighting up. Like,
she's Blanche.
Genuinely, like, heart Blanche. Eyes emoji.
I'm Blanche when she's going around and she's putting the paper lanterns over and she's, you know, if you read it, you know.
It's an inside joke.
It's an inside reference to a 1947 play. Oh, Penny is up. She got all worked up by Blanche.
She's like, August needs comfort. She seems hysterical.
I am just a hysterical woman. Yes, that is true. Okay, so what's your number five pick?
So I did something weird with my picks because I was really struggling when I said I'm all over the place. Like, there's no genre I could be like where you know that you want short and sad.
Mm-hmm.
That's so succinct and perfect. I literally could just say like vomit because I'm all over the place. And so with each pick, I tried to represent.
What if your picks were actually all based in vomit? So all of the books had to include graphic depictions of vomiting.
Yeah.
Just like projectile.
I mean, some people might associate these books with vomit.
Okay. Because they're bad? Or...
I don't think they're bad.
Well, obviously, you picked them.
Not everyone agrees with my taste. But basically, there are, like, five genres or, like, types of books I'm representing
for
my picks. Because I really, really struggled to be consistent, as usual, in my life. So, the first one is representing classics. If I'm going to bring a classic... which I very rarely do. It's mm-hmm. going to be a reread.
Okay.
And it's going to be short, and it's going to be one that I think is fun in a dark way.
Can I say what I think yours is?
Yeah.
Can I please? Is it Frankenstein?
It's not.
Oh, fuck.
You're going to be surprised by this pick, because I was surprised that I was like, if I was going on a vacation.
Jane Eyre?
An island vacation, and I want something dark.
The Most Dangerous Game?
Close.
Lord of the Flies?
It's Lord of the Flies.
Ah.
She got there, folks.
Lord of the Flies is loosely based off of real Hawaiian kids.
Yeah.
Or maybe that followed after. I'm not sure. I think that was after.
There was a plane crash that, mm-hmm. like, schoolboys actually did do this.
MFM covered it. Go to them for info, not us.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, they covered it recently.
Where it got planted in my brain.
I think it was sometime in June that they did it. Do not hold us to that, listener. We don't know anything.
I don't know anything. Anyway, I do know that Lord of the Flies is a really fun book, and I know that's weird to say, but...
It is a really... I read that over summer when I was in high school, and I loved it.
It's just kind of funny, too, yeah. like how ridiculous it is.
I mean, children go on fucking nuts, like, literally.
I love it. Yeah, I honestly love it. And so that came out in 1954, which I think is also wild because I forget how old it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. By William Golding. And if you don't know, it's... What is it? What's the number? 12?
I think it's like 12 boys, right?
I think it's 12. It's 12 English schoolboys who essentially get marooned on this island.
And they're like 10 to like 14 years old, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like,
small.
They're small. Yeah, they're very small. And
Penny, stop.
There are no adults around. So then that takes away like the power hierarchy that they're used to coming from like a strict boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I feel like I don't have to. I'm going to explain it, but I know it feels redundant because everyone knows what Lord of the Flies is, even if you haven't read it, mm-hmm. because it's...
An idea of, like, the concept, at least. Yeah. I might not know the title, but...
Like, the cultural prevalence of the metaphor of Lord of the Flies. Like, how mm-hmm. many times do you hear, like, Lord of the Flies out there? Or, mm-hmm. like, our friend Emily, I was visiting her when I was in SoCal, and her parents were going out of town for a week, and her dad made a joke, like, he comes back, and it's going to be Lord of the Flies in the house with her and her sister. So, like, stuff like that... Uh-huh. It's just so relevant. But essentially, these children descend into madness and, like, because I'm trying to think of the right word. Like, when humans aren't surrounded by the structures that society impose,
mm-hmm.
you regress to, like, natural, almost, like, savage-like behaviors mm-hmm. because you're not being held accountable by society. And so...
So you don't have, like, that moral responsibility to the people around you to be...
Yeah.
What society now deems to be decent.
Yeah, and the people who do die.
Penny doesn't like this. Penny's leaving the room.
Yeah, Penny's like, I've had enough. Justice for Picky.
Yeah. Penny is pro-Picky, that's for sure.
But I think it's a fun one to read on vacation, especially if, like, you're going to an island.
Yeah.
And, like, especially if you're a parent surrounded by kids. That's why I feel like I would be the type of mom to do that.
Hey, kids. you want to die today, read this book.
Ugh. Yeah, so that's my number five pick. What's
nice. I love that we both went more classical for our number five. Wow, same wavelength.
Always.
Who knew? Okay. My number four is one that I don't think you're going to be surprised about.
Okay.
It's No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy. short and sad, you know, it fits the criteria. Okay. This is also the most simple McCarthy there is. Like, if you want a great introduction to Cormac McCarthy, start with No Country for Old Men, because it was originally written as the screenplay that the Coen brothers so expertly made, specifically Anton Chigurh, that presentation. Wow. Wow. I love this book. I had seen the movie many, many times before reading it. If I was going to pick any book from my list to be an audiobook rec, this might be the one.
Okay.
There's another contender, but we'll see. But this is just really great. If you want a wonderful Southern Gothic, it's for you. So for background, No Country for Old Men is a recent Cormac McCarthy novel. It came out in 2005, and it was originally written as a screenplay adaptation, the film that a lot of us, I feel like, have seen or at least know of. And this novel is set at the U.S.-Mexico border in the 1980s and focuses on drug trafficking and drug movement. It specifically focuses on Llewellyn Moss and Anton Chigurh and Ed Tom Bell, three different men, very, very different lifestyles that all tie together in multiple ways, some would say. This is just, as I was saying earlier, I really like a dark read. If I'm going to pick a dark read by McCarthy for a vacation read, I'm going to pick this over the road. And I'm not going to even think about bringing Blood Meridian, because that's just too much. But, you know, like, the road is just like a little bit too sad.
Yeah.
No Country for Old Men. It's more lawless landscape. There's no more order. You know, times have changed and people aren't comfortable with the world as it is now. They don't understand it. So really going into that and kind of going into moral responsibility about, like, how you should treat other people and, like, what you should do in certain situations. This is also just great because Anton Chigurh is one of the best villains I feel like that's ever been written, and this is a very quick read. I think it's only like 200 pages. He's just so fucking scary, and I just always picture Javier Bardem with his stupid bowl haircut, and I want to be him for Halloween so badly. And yeah, that's No Country for Old Men. But if you don't want to read it, just watch the movie. It's pretty much a perfect adaptation.
Yeah.
So
it's a really good movie for someone who doesn't generally, like, I haven't read the book, but I like the movie.
Yeah.
I knew McCarthy was going to show up in there for you. I knew it.
I debated putting Devil All the Time, but people might be sick about me hearing me talk about it. Oh, it's just so perfect. Okay. So what's your next pick?
Okay, so this next book represents the detective fiction / thriller genre that I also turn to, and that's Mystic River by Dennis Lehane.
Mm.
I think it's Lehane. He also wrote Shutter Island.
Somebody just messaged us and told us to read Mystic River, and I just added it to my TBR, like, no joke, I think yesterday.
Oh, that's crazy, because my sister Allie and basically my adopted sister Chatelle, they both recently read this, and that's why it was kind of at the top of my mind as we were just talking about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about it.
I actually really love this book. I read it when I was writing for that company, so that did initially make this experience of it different, but the more I think about the book, it's such a well-written detective fiction, but it's complicated as fuck.
Okay.
So it's about three boyhood friends, Jimmy, Dave, and there's the one who becomes a cop. So.
Well, fuck him. So
I was like, I just blanked on his name, but I was like, does it matter? Because he annoyed me.
We'll just call him a cab.
Yeah, he's a pig.
But not like Piggy from Lord of the Flies.
Not because
he's stupider.
And so the three of them, they're children and they're playing, and Dave gets abducted.
Uh-huh.
And horrific things happen to him. He does eventually come back from his abduction.
Uh-huh.
And the narrative then goes 30 years ahead when they're grown men. It talks a lot about, like, how repressive and toxic the culture surrounding victims of sexual abuse, particularly young boys who are victims of sexual abuse, in the 70s and 80s, and how that affects Dave for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Also how it affects the community. Like, Jimmy goes one direction, cop goes in one direction, becomes a cop, and is very, like, trying to think of a good comparison. It feels just very, like, classic cop show, where there's that dynamic of the friend who kind of doesn't necessarily follow the law. Like, Jimmy goes to prison at one point, but he turns his life around.
Okay.
And
I bring up a television show that we just watched?
Mare of
Easttown.
Yes,
kind of sounds like that.
It's actually a lot like that.
Okay.
Like, finishing Mayor of Easttown, I was like, this, like, the small knit community where the cops who work in the community actually know the people, and so
Working with the community as it's supposed to be, actually knowing the community that they're serving.
That's exactly what I was gonna fucking say, dude. You just read my mind. Is that, like, watching Mayor of Easttown, and even to an extent Mystic River, it's still not perfect. Still a lot of problems there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how law enforcement, but, like, it shouldn't be enforcement, needs to operate, where they need to serve the community, mm-hmm. and know them, because that's a layered connection.
Not to say that Mayor is a perfect cop, because she definitely is not, if you've seen the show.
Oh my god.
You know.
In the first episode when she says that shit about the girl who's missing.
Yeah, just go watch Mayor of Easttown. A perfect show. I really like Guy Pearce.
It's so good. Evan
also,
Peters.
I mainly like your team, Evan Peters. I'm team Guy Pearce. It's fine. We can differ. Wow. Yeah. Well, who knew that we were going to like different men?
Anyway, Mystic River. Sorry, I'm going all over the place. So basically, in the beginning of the book, after, like, you know that background of those three friends, Jimmy's daughter... his teenage daughter is found murdered, and it's cop's job to solve the murder, and Dave is essentially a suspect.
Ah.
And so that's how those three come together.
Wow, that sounds great.
It's really good, and it's actually very long. I'm now realizing that, like, this is, I think, almost 500 pages or 400 pages, so not my typical beach read.
Would you recommend it for an audiobook?
I don't know. I haven't listened to the audiobook. I think I would, although it's a really well-written detective fiction, but there's lots of great use of, like, imagery, and it's really subtle in its language, and there are, I think, a lot of clues. Like, to me, I was able to figure out what happened, but there are a lot of red herrings.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the way detective fiction is supposed to do. You're supposed to change your mind multiple times. I do think you would benefit from having a physical copy, because when you start to piece it together, you can go back.
Okay.
And language is really, really important to solving it.
Okay. Fuck, okay. Well, whoever messaged us about it, I'm getting even more hyped. I'm really excited to read this.
I would love to do an episode on Mystic River, I think.
Yeah, it sounds great.
There's a lot to unpack, especially surrounding victims of sexual abuse.
Okay. Well, we'll have to go. I'll have to go get a copy. You already have one, so.
You could use mine if you want.
Wow.
I know, I'm excited. I think you'll like that one
a lot.
That
sounds really good. Okay. I'm stoked. Wow. Okay.
So then we're on your number three, right?
Yes. Okay. So my third is actually a book that I read fairly recently. I would say that this is more easily categorized as a novella, and it has to be one of my favorite books that I've read so far this year. I was completely blown away. I had no idea what it was about going into it, and I'm blown away. What else can I say? Do you know what it is?
Is it The Awakening?
No.
Oh.
I wouldn't bring The Awakening on it. I love to be sad on a trip, but maybe not that sad. Not that this book is any less depressing, just a different type depressing.
Is it the one you read after The Awakening?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's The Hour of the Star by Clarice Lispector. I had read another Clarice Lispector short story before this. I can't remember what it was called. I've had this book on my bookshelf since... before quarantine. I think I got it right before quarantine, and I just got to it. Amazing. It was like 80 pages long. I don't know how something so short could be so magnificent. It's like how, like, Brokeback Mountain was so short, and I was entirely blown away. It was like this, but, like, depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Just for note, I did read the translation by Benjamin Moser. I don't know how other translations of this work are, so I'm just going to advocate for that one. I really enjoyed reading this translation. And this is a story really deals with doubling and multiple layers of narration. So we have a narrator who's a physical character in the book talking about what he's going to be speaking about. And, you know, he cuts in, he's constantly interrupting his own story. So for a while, you're just getting him being like, I'm going to share the story. And that's like the first however many pages. And then you get into the story of Macabea. I think that's how you pronounce her name. I do not speak Portuguese, so I apologize, Clarice Lispector. I cannot pronounce any of your characters' names correctly, but I will try, and once I hear them, I'll try even harder. So our narrator is Rodrigo SM, and he tells the story of Macabea, an impoverished 19-year-old living in Rio de Janeiro, and talking about her own understanding of her life, her health, her relationships with other people, and also her own understanding of why she's here, why she's alive, and what impact she's making on her society or just on herself. This is definitely one of the most interesting protagonists I've ever had. Macabea, not Rodrigo, the narrator. experiencing the world through her eyes and also experiencing Rio in the time period that's depicted. It was written in the 70s, feels like it could take place really any time before then. It was just entirely fascinating. I haven't read a lot of Portuguese-based texts, and so being shown this world of these slums in Rio at this time period was just entirely fascinating to me. I felt like I was in a place where it was self-contained, but also in incredible poverty, and just like being pushed into that world in that way was just so engaging, and I'd never experienced anything like it before. I have to get Clarice Lispector has a beautiful collection of all of her short stories. It has a photo of a woman on the front wearing sunglasses, and then there's lines cutting through it, and it goes all the way around the jacket for it, and I've been obsessed with it for a couple of years now. It's just phenomenal, and I just didn't know I could be so blown away. Like, this might be a contender for my favorite book of the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's and I just word vomited so much about it, I don't even know what I said.
Just blacked out. That sounds, I mean, I've been wanting to read it since you mentioned it, but mm-hmm. Now I just want to read it more.
It's so good. And just like that, I love a layer of narration like that. It just really reminded me, I would say like almost like Nabokov in the writing style. It really reminded me of Pale Fire, which is one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. I just really, really loved it.
Good.
Yeah. Highly recommend. Okay.
What an experience.
Yeah. What's your next pick?
Number three is to represent the poetry category, because I do bring at least one collection of poetry every time I go on vacation. And this one I picked is The World's Wife by Carol Ann Duffy, which is one of my favorite collections of poetry. I chose this one because it's really fucking funny, but also it's like great poetry. And so The World's Wife is a collection of poems that Duffy writes from the perspectives of women who are traditionally silent in very famous myths. So it's all over the place. Like, it is like Mrs. Freud is one, Mrs. Darwin. There's so many that I'm blanking. Not even necessarily silent, but I think women who have their narratives kind of controlled by men. So like Medusa has one, which is one of my favorites.
What's that?
Queen Herod comes in as a counterpart to Herod, King Herod from the Bible. There's so many I'm like blanking because I could like there's Sisyphus's wife. And, like, she's complaining about how stupid he is to keep pushing the boulder up. It's so great because it's funny, it's witty, but also, like, there's that oomph of feminism where it's all, okay. Like, fuck the men. Like, the Medusa one is so great because she's like, of course I'm turning men to stone. They're all awful to me. Why wouldn't? Like, of course I'm going to eat you like air. Like, she references Sylvia Plath a lot. She says this line, like, do I terrify? Like, Sylvia, she is pulling from Sylvia Plath, Adrienne Rich, famous poets like that. And there's another one. Oh, there's Mrs. Faust, which is a good one. It's really great.
I'm surprised that's not your favorite.
It's just, it's like a modern telling of Faust rather than like...
The classical.
The classic. Yeah. The Medusa one is for sure my favorite, but I think Queen Herod is also good. Oh, very there's nice. A lot of great ones in there. I would recommend it. One, because it's just so quick and fun to read. I made my sister read it when I was staying with her, and she just, like, sat on the couch and read it in one sitting, and, like, she would laugh every once in a while. And it's great, too, because if I don't recognize a name, I'll Google the myth and be like, I didn't even realize this woman had a role in this in this story, which is sad because it's such a minor role, but then you get to learn about that person.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Wow, okay. I know I said earlier I'm not the biggest poetry person, but that might be something that I would check out. I'm still not going to be a big poetry person, though.
That's fair,
yeah. That sounds really cool, though.
I really like, I think this is the collection that if you're not into poetry, you might enjoy because, I mean, especially if you're someone, I think, like you and myself, who really are attached to myths and legends and folklore, and this is a great way to reimagine them.
Yeah, and it also seems like, you know, if you're interested in alternative tellings of different stories, like, we're both very into, like, Song of Achilles, but just, like, having those varied perspectives is something that I feel like we both really enjoy.
Totally, yeah.
Very cool, okay. What's this one called again?
The World's Wife by Carol Ann Duffy.
Okay,
so then what's your number two?
My number two is a book that I also read this year, and I was trying to go for more of the classical sense of vacation reads with this one, and that's Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng. Great mystery, great detective story, while also exploring family dynamics across different generations of people within a family. I liked this a lot more than Little Fires Everywhere. After like finishing both and having time, like I think this is a superior novel. They're both fantastic. They both could have easily gone in the slot. I just really, really liked Everything I Never Told You. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of that is because it takes place in the 70s and there's just some really cool imagery. So Everything I Never Told You follows the life of the Lee family after their eldest daughter, Lydia Lee, is found dead floating in a local lake. Mm-hmm. They're attempting to piece together Laura's life, her last moments, and also like how they're going to go forward and survive as a family after suffering this immense tragedy. So it explores the relationships between her parents, who are in an interracial marriage. Her father is Chinese and her mother is a white American woman. I'm also exploring the relationships between their two other children that are still alive facing the death of their sister and how they respond to it. Maybe what they know that the parents don't know or what the parents know that the other children don't know. Just really going into those dynamics. I think this is just an absolutely stunning novel. I would compare it to other books that explore family dynamics, especially after tragedy. So, like, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is The Vanishing Half mm-hmm. for a newer release. Also, I just read Red at the Bone, which is one of your faves. Pretty similar in that way, too. Just, like, really, like, exploring those family dynamics and what is actually known versus what is just perceived.
Yeah.
And it's really fun.
I just bought that book. It's also on my summer TBR. It's not on this list, but...
It's a good one. It's also, you know, I listened to the audiobook of this, really enjoyed the audiobook. I can't vouch for reading a physical copy because I haven't done that yet, but this is one that I would buy and I would love the opportunity to read a physical copy of, so.
I've only heard fantastic things about it.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. Okay, what's your next pick?
Okay, so this one is, sometimes when I'm on vacation, I just want to read a bit of fluff, like feel good stories, ones that I'm not going to be stressed out about what happens, and that I can just kind of check out by checking into this story. Mm-hmm. And that is The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, which I think is actually such a sweet, well-done story. Mm-hmm. And it's about a woman who, she does choose suicide, but while she's doing it, she's, like, regretting it. So I'm trying to articulate, where she has, like, this moment of thinking to do it, and almost accidentally does it.
Oh.
So she... contemplates suicide, because that's kind of essential to find the library is to have that that doubt, that like that hesitation.
Okay.
So essentially it's a book that follows a woman who's in an incredibly tough spot in her life. She's very unhappy with her romantic relationships, with her job, with her relationships to her family members. She's just in she's in a tough spot, and so she contemplates suicide, and in doing so she is exposed to something called the Midnight Library, which is when you are between the living and the dead, and basically when you are grappling with which way to move forward, the library opens itself up to you, and each book is a potential life you could have lived. So I really like it because I do believe there's a bunch of different names for this theory, but I can't remember exactly, but a theory where like a single choice in your life, like just even one choice determines the trajectory of your life. Mm-hmm. And that's what the book is kind of operating under the assumption of, where there's a book on the shelf where it's like, oh, she did decide to take that after school swimming class. Mm-hmm. And so then she became an Olympic swimmer. Oh. Or she did decide to go out with that guy, and now they have like four kids, and like they live in wherever, Wisconsin or something, like just like stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, we're like just very, very different lives than what she has. Yeah. And a lot of them are very fulfilling for her, and they're based on all of her regrets, where she's all like, oh, I wish I had pursued swimming, I was really good at it. Mm-hmm. But when she steps into that life, she realizes that she doesn't have a connection to her brother.
Oh, okay.
And, like, just, like, everything is missing. And so it's essentially the message, which I think is pretty predictable, which I don't think is going to be a spoiler, but I'll cut this out if it is. But the message is that, like, there's stuff within each life to value, and that includes the life that you currently aren't happy with. And so it's just really heartwarming, and there's so much philosophy in it, because her pet obsession is philosophy. So interwoven within the lightness of the story are these nuggets of, like, really, really wise, just like philosophical, I don't know, epiphanies for her.
Nice.
And it's really sweet, and it really made me appreciate the life I have, and but also it does like recognize that you are to a degree like I don't know, degree responsible for your own happiness in the fact mm-hmm. that you can take action in some ways.
Yeah.
Obviously that...
Freedom from choice.
Freedom of choice. So yeah. I really like it. I would recommend it for anyone going on a vacation anytime soon.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, now I'm dying to know, what's your number one if I know Devil All the Time is not on the list?
Yeah, I have only Devil All the Time was here. I tried to pick something that's maybe a little bit more fun. It's also within the realm of detective fiction, more canonical detective fiction, and that is Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith. This book is really fucking fun. So this book also made into a very popular movie directed by Alfred Hitchcock. I'm not as wild about the movie, although I do love Bruno. So Bruno is, he's a wild guy. But so Strangers on a Train follows two men who are named Guy Haines and Charles Anthony Bruno. Bruno, we refer to as Bruno, who become entangled after Bruno proposes that they trade murders after meeting on a train. So each man has somebody in their lives that they want to get rid of, someone that they believe if they were gone, if they had been murdered, their lives would be infinitely better. Mm-hmm. Bruno is shown to be a very unreliable and chaotic individual and proposes this. Guy Haines is, I believe, an architect, thinks this is all a bit silly, and then they become entangled as things happen. And it's great. The audiobook for this, if I was going to pick one as an audiobook, I'm fairly certain this was my number one audiobook on our audiobook episode, and it's just for the impression that Bruno has, because it is fantastic.
Really?
Just like, because he's drunk. Mm-hmm. All the time. Alcoholism is very prominent in this book, as I feel like it is within a lot of noirs, a lot of detective fiction of this time period, really detective fiction of any time period. But he like slurs a lot and lisps a lot because he's constantly drunk, and just the way that the narrator read that was so fun. I really, really liked it. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. So Strangers on a Train is my number one pick. I'm not going to say too much about it because I feel like I've talked about it a couple of times, but I know for sure I went into more detail in our audiobooks episode if you're interested in hearing a little bit more.
Yeah, you for sure did. So that would be a great place.
Yeah.
Check in.
Well, what's your number one?
I also love to read memoirs on vacation, mm-hmm. especially lighthearted or comedic memoirs. And so this is a book we both just recently finished.
Yes.
And my number one pick is going to be Dear Girls by Ali Wong. It was so funny reading it. It was so funny, but I also think it's just so representative of what I love about a good memoir, where, yeah, it's funny, and some of it's really gross.
Yeah.
but also it's rooted in her experiences mm-hmm. and the way she views the world, and that allows a lot of really great reflection. And the end, where her husband writes a chapter.
I didn't know that when I got to that. I was like, that's so sweet.
Me either. That brought that from a 4 to a 5 mm. because it just like hit me in the gut. It was so genuinely awesome. And the way it was well balanced with like his retelling of their meeting and how different their experiences were. It's just great. If you want a bit of like, I think it's, I also thought of it as like, it's a love story. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a letter to her children, like a love letter, but also it's a true representation of motherhood. Mm-hmm. I learned stuff about childbirth I did not want to know, but I'm glad that I do.
Yeah.
And also she's just so honest and like transparent. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think her girls should ever read the book. Like, ever.
I don't know. Her comedy and everything is very similar, so I'm sure they've already heard it all.
I don't know. Like, yeah. Even when they're 21, I don't know if I would ever want to read this about my mom. But it's just really fun, like, to the point where, like, I was folding laundry and literally laughed out loud.
Yeah.
It was just so fun. It's also really short. The audiobook is great because she reads it, so then it just feels like you're attending, like, a stand-up show.
Yeah, yeah. I love that you did, like, comedy memoir. I almost put a David Sedaris book as my number one, but I was like, I probably should have because they were all depressing. But
which one would you choose if...
Probably Me Talk Pretty One Day or When You Are Engulfed in Flames. Those are my two favorites.
You know, it's funny is my therapist loves David Sedaris, and she brought him up last.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, and I was like,
love to see it.
I was like, my best friend August loves David Sedaris.
Read 5 of his books this year. Yeah. He's great. Calypso is also really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. I just finished Dear Girls, like, literally right before you came over, and I was walking Penny earlier, and it got to the dad chapter, and when he started reading, I audibly went, aww, while out for a walk. So I don't know if there's any people around me. Let's hope they don't judge me too hard. Although I did have a mask on, so they probably couldn't see that it was me.
One of the benefits of masks.
Yes. Okay. Well, now we have a whole other thing to do where we share books that we want to read this summer.
Yeah.
My first one is a book that I've had on my shelves for like 6 months now, and I really want to get to it. Actually, every single book on this list is one that I've had on my bookshelves that I've been meaning to get to. So that's another thing I do over summer is I try to like knock off some ones that I've been meaning to get to.
I'm just realizing same, literally same.
Wow.
You really are on the
We're
same
in
wavelength.
Sync, man. We're in sync. So the first book that I want to read this summer is by Megha Majumdar, and that's A Burning. Came out in 2020. You might know it from, I would say it's a pretty iconic cover at this point, of the flames in yellow, red, and orange.
Yes.
I have no idea what this book is about, except for it's all over Bookstagram, and it looks beautiful, so I'm sure that it is.
I know it's like a political fiction.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Penny is very hungry for this book. Okay. What is your first summer TBR book?
New release, hot book, currently as of today, which is early June, The Maidens by Alex, I can never say his last name, I did the same thing for The Silent Patient, like Michaelides, I'm sorry, he's Greek and I'm stupid, so I can't, the combination doesn't work, but he wrote The Silent Patient, which I read last year and really liked, like, I would say loved, actually. And so I just got this book in a couple days ago, and I'm already eyeballing it, even though I know I have three books I need to get read for the podcast ASAP. But The Maidens, I'm kind of like doing the side eye emoji because it looks so good.
It's also just such a beautiful looking book, too.
Do you know what it's about?
Everyone's saying it's just like secret history, but I haven't read secret history, so I don't know what that means.
Okay, so this could be complete bullshit because this is literally like not even a secondhand retelling. It's like a third-hand retelling of someone who heard someone who's heard someone tell it.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's about this woman who either works at a college or she's visiting, and she's realizing there's this cult-like following of young women following this like professor, or like there's a secret club or something. And so I think that's where the maidens idea comes from.
Okay.
But that's where the secret history element, where it is a college campus.
Uh-huh.
It has cult energy with like predator energy and secret society energy. So I am intrigued. Also, the cover is stunning.
It's so beautiful. Like, knocked it out of the park. I want to own and I just want to look at all the time.
100% agree.
Beautiful. Okay. So I still need to read Silent Patient.
I think you'd like it. I recommend the audiobook, though.
Yeah, I just got to get around to it, you know. The next book on my list is one that you're very happy to hear about, I'm sure, and that's White Teeth by Zadie Smith.
Woo!
You've been telling me to read this book for, like, 3 years. I don't really know what it's about. I have a really pretty green edition. You have a really pretty blue edition. We should read it together, even though you've read it before.
I do want to reread it, so okay. I would read it with you.
Hell yeah. Okay, what's your next on your TBR?
This one's The Final Revival of Opal and Neve by Donnie Walton. It came out late last year, I think. Maybe early this year. But I've had it on my shelf for at least since January, and I've been constantly like, that's the next book I'm going to read. That's the next book I'm going to read, because I do want to read it so badly, but then other books get in the way. Typical struggle. but it's about Opal, I think. Okay, let me restart what it's about. So it's about, it gives me Daisy Jones and the Six energy, because it's a journalist who has this connection to this famous black punk rock singer.
Wow.
And I remember,
I was about to say, is it like almost famous? But
no, she's like, I can't remember the description, but I remember thinking it was like, she's the start of the punk movement, and she's a black woman, and so like she didn't get like the
recognition she deserves. Yeah,
exactly. But the journalist who's interviewing her has a complicated relationship, I think, from the first three pages that I read when I was like deciding if I wanted to buy it, where her dad had an affair with this woman, Opal.
Okay.
And so it's kind of, so basically Opal, and I don't know if it's Neve or Nev, and I don't even know who Nev is. I don't know if that's the journalist's dad or if that's a completely different person. But yeah, I don't know exactly who Neve or Nev is, so I'm sorry. But I know that him and Opal were in the band at one point, or they did music together, and they're doing this like reunion concert.
Okay.
And that's what's starting the interview. And so I know this is not informative to anyone because I know nothing at all, but this was me trying to process it, and it looks good.
Okay. Well, I mean, we don't know what these books are about. We haven't read them. So if you want details, go somewhere else. We're not
that's for not
you.
What we're known for. But please stay.
Oh, yeah. We need the listens. Okay. My next on my TBR is one that I got fairly recently, and it's one that I've been meaning to read for quite some time, and that's The Thief's Journal by Jean Genet. This is an author that Patti Smith talks about constantly, and that's pretty much the only reason why I want to read him.
Yep, that's fair.
She guides all my decisions, so.
She's your Lord and Savior.
Seriously, what is your next on your TBR?
My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell. Mm-hmm. So we're going to read this for the podcast.
Yeah, I was going to put it on my list, but then I knew you were going to have it, so.
Yeah.
We're in the clear.
And I've really come full circle for this book. Like, I was so reluctant at first. You remember when you first brought it up, and I was like, August, no. Like, I can't do that. That sounds gross. And then
it is gross.
It is gross. Mm-hmm. I was right about that. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was going to be Lolita-esque in the way that I didn't enjoy reading Lolita. Mm-hmm. It was really difficult for me. Whereas My Dark Vanessa focuses more on the woman's actual perspective and her dealing and, not accepting, but healing from the trauma. I also think it's going to be really interesting to book to talk about because there's a question of plagiarism, which we're going to get into in the episode.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I want to read that this summer as well. Just going to back up that. Speaking of Lolita, the next book on my list is called The Real Lolita, it's a true crime book by Sarah Weinman. I've had this book since pretty much it came out. I was working at a bookstore at the time, and I got an advanced reader copy. I have not read it, and I'm very excited to, because I also just heard the author speak on a podcast called Tenfold More Wicked. The host of that podcast is doing a series where she's interviewing true crime authors right now, and this interview was just super engaging. Also just something that I had wanted to read for a while. And this is about the true crime case that a lot of people say Vladimir Nabokov was greatly inspired by when writing Lolita. He had already started writing Lolita when this case was really getting a lot of attention in the news, but he had an immense period of writing after that in which the book was finished. I think he was working on it for like 4 or 5 years beforehand and was just like really stuck, experiencing a lot of writer's block, wasn't moving forward in the story. And then this case became very, very well known across the entire world. And then he finished the book. So I'm excited to read it. I also just need some true crime this summer. So
you always do.
Always do. Without true crime. Very true. Okay. What's your next TBR?
Anxious People by Frederick Backman. He wrote A Man Called
Uva.
A Man Called Eve. Yeah, A Man Called Uva. Thank you so much. And so Anxious People, I actually know very little about. I just happened to find a used copy, and I've been wanting to read Backman. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm going to get it. And also, it's really short. So I was like, this will help me out.
I might read that with you. I have I know the audiobook's on Libby, so I might listen to it while you read it. Because I really liked A Man Called Uva.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I want to read that book. That was the one I wanted to read first from him, but when a $6 hardback falls in your lap,
you kind of just got to take that opportunity.
Pull the trigger, dude. Yeah. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. Okay.
I guess that brings us to your last TBR list.
Yeah. Right? Also one that we want to read together, along with reading it with one of our friends, Jess.
Ooh, Jess.
From Jess Ducker Reads on Instagram, a lovely angel. That's Ariadne by Jennifer Saint. It's the story of Ariadne. It just came out this last year. It came out just like a month ago, really. And I'm really excited to read that. We're all for classical retellings, as I think we've made clear in this episode and in every episode. and I'm excited for this one. I've heard good things, and I've been trying to stay away from reviews because I don't want any spoilers, but I'm feeling ready for it.
I'm really excited to read that book. Mm-hmm. I'll also just say that if you're not following Jess at Jess Decker Reads on Instagram, do it, because she not only has like a beautiful and like perfect aesthetic in all of her pictures, but she writes such great reviews.
Yeah,
and she reads so much. Mm-hmm. Like, she is such a quick reader, but like it reads it's with such depth that you get like a really quality review.
Yeah, her reviews are some of my favorites. Like, I can always trust that if she likes something, I think we pretty much would too. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, big supporters of her. Also, just a very talented artist.
Yeah, can't even love talk to about see embroidery. Yeah.
Oh, that A Little Life embroidery, a babe. Okay.
My heart. We can't talk about Jess anymore.
Yeah, we'll love her too much. Okay.
So my last one is If Beale Street Could Talk by James Baldwin. Yay! Which is, I've been dying to get to. I know you loved it. It was one of your favorites of 2020, so it's been on my TBR for the longest time. And also, I try to get like a classic in over the summer so that I don't feel like I'm just reading trash, which it's not trash. It really isn't, but you know.
We're still in that mindset pushed on us from years of being in academia, so.
Which is wrong and toxic.
But But also it's good to have a classic in there every now and then. Yeah.
And also a Baldwin. I want to read all of Baldwin's at one point. And so that was my kind of like, okay, you need to get a Baldwin in every couple months.
Mm-hmm. I love that we both picked one like canonical, you know, big C canonical text for our TBR.
Yeah.
That's good.
Love it.
Well, very nice. Well, those are our vacation reads. Ones that we've read and highly recommend and love, as well as some that we're planning on reading this summer. Do you like our list? Do you hate our list? You can let us know via Instagram. You can message the podcast and follow us there at Booked On Podcast on Instagram. You can find my Instagram, August, at Iggy Poop.
And my Instagram, Kendra, at Kendra Lapp.
Yeah. And you can also follow and subscribe wherever you're listening, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you're on Apple Podcasts, why not give us a 5-star review? It's so easy and it makes us so happy. If you want to make us even more happy and you have the time, a written review is greatly appreciated.
Also, if you're curious what we're doing next, we are covering Macbeth next. Woo-hoo. Which poor August is being such a good sport.
I made you read Gatsby, and this just gets me one step closer to you reading Devil all the time, so.
Yeah, we're gonna do this trade-off every once in a while, or one of us chooses one, and the other one sucks it up and does it, so shout out to August, because we're covering that. It's my favorite Shakespeare play, and also I just think it's such a rich text to analyze.
And also, it's a play with witches.
Yeah, and fuck yeah, Lady Macbeth.
Hell like, yeah. Take a look queen. At these hands. Yeah, I will. Don't wash them. Good for you, but also maybe not good for you. There's a lot there. We'll have to get into it in that episode.
More to follow next week. So yeah. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, we hope you're having a great day.
Bye.